Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then rewatch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember, and then we score the movie again.
With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you? It's been a while.
It has. It's been a couple of weeks since we did this. I'm all right. I don't want to over or understate how I am. I'm just going to go with, yeah, I'm all right. You?
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm getting there. I don't know where there is.
It's at the other side of the rainbow.
Oh, okay.
Or if you prefer, second star to the right and straight on till morning.
I'll get to either one of those eventually, I think, yeah. We'll see what happens first.
For those of you who've been wondering where we've been, well, there's lots of things happening in our lives, and Sam's been a little bit poorly and I had to do a visit somewhere. So, you know, but we're delighted to be back. And I have to say the emails have been stacking up. And I have a magnificent email from someone who has the equally magnificent name.
Oh.
Dwayne Dunlop.
Wow, that is quite the name.
So well done, Dwayne. Thanks very much. Even more interesting is that Dwayne has emailed all the way from Sydney in Australia.
Oh, wow.
Which is magnificent.
Wow.
And he asks a question, which is a really nice way into the episode that we're about to do.
If it's solving a crime, I can't answer that.
Oh. Well, we'll have to move on then. He begins his email by thanking us and congratulating us for our hard work and how much he enjoys it. So you're welcome, Dwayne. And he then as sort of says he'd been waiting for some time for our Sherlock Holmes episode to drop, I believe is the technical term. And so he asked a question about that, and I think it's a really good way in. And so his question is, in our dream Sherlock Holmes movie, who would we cast as Sherlock Holmes? And it can't be somebody that we've already seen as Sherlock Holmes in a different incarnation. And I thought, okay, that's a good question to get us into this. And he was obviously waiting. So thanks, Dwayne. And yeah, Dwayne Dunlop, it's either the best name ever. Well, it is the best name ever. And it may well be the most Australian name I've ever heard.
Yeah, I like it though. It's good.
It's a good name. Good name. So dream Sherlock Holmes, which is a nice way into this. But it can't be somebody that's already played Sherlock Holmes.
I think, for me, the first person that comes to mind who I think could do that role, maybe because he's already done it, I'm not entirely sure. If he has done it, I haven't seen it, so I think that counts, is Richard E. Grant. I think he'd be great at that.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. I think he would be a good... he'd be an excellent, sort of fairly traditional Sherlock Holmes, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
okay. This is hard for me because all the actors that I really like would now officially, I suspect, be too old to play Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
I thought about one that I don't know if he's played Sherlock Holmes. Maybe he has. But I had two and I checked, okay? And one of them has played Sherlock Holmes, so it doesn't count. So my number one pick was Peter Capaldi.
Oh, yeah, okay. I like that.
But he has actually played Sherlock Holmes. And then I thought, well, actually, what about Matt Smith?
Yeah. Yeah, that would work.
Him who was on the Doctor Who program.
Game of Thrones. What? Oh, yeah.
He would be good.
Yeah.
So, and then I thought maybe David Tennant would be a good Doctor Who. But no, hang on.
He's been the Doctor twice.
And then I realised that I think Matt Smith's a better actor. So I'm going to go with Matt Smith as my pick for Sherlock.
You could argue that he technically has played Sherlock Holmes in one episode where Richard E. Grant is the villain, ironically.
Yeah. Wow.
There you go.
That does kind of lead us on to Sherlock Holmes quite nicely, which is the question is, I guess, in which universe would you have thought that Robert Downey Jr. would play Sherlock Holmes?
I know, it is a very interesting casting choice, I think. One that does slightly work in its own way.
And yet here he is, and he does a pretty decent job of it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I like to think so, yeah.
It is one of those movies, and sort of reflecting on it as we were thinking about doing it, and then off I went to go and watch it. One of the things I was thinking about is I'm about to go and watch a Guy Ritchie film starring Robert Downey Jr. that's Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And I wasn't exactly filled with joy. And but I do wonder if your score will change or my score will change, because you were quite generous and I was quite harsh.
Yeah, I think I was a little bit too generous, not trying to get into it too soon. But I'm kind of curious as to what you thought and where the conversation will go with it.
Well, let's see. I mean, let's stick with the cast, because it is a good one. There's nothing wrong with the people that are in this film, is there?
No, not at all. No.
I think the Holmes and Watson dynamic is good. There's a good bromance going on there.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where they do need to have that sort of bromance going on, and I do think they play off each other quite well, as characters and as actors. I think if it didn't have one and the other, it would just completely fail.
Mark Strong is a decent bad guy. He plays that with enough verve to make it just on the edge of unbelievable, but otherwise totally believable.
Yeah, I always think everything that I've seen Mark Strong in, he does a fantastic job of his role. I actually forgot he was in this film, and when I saw him at the beginning, in that sort of scene that looks like the end, well, it is the end of a crime that's going on that they stop, you sort of think, okay, this is just an introduction of the characters, but when I watched it, I thought, I really hope he stays the villain, because I couldn't remember. Ironically, a podcast about remembering films. But then as soon as he kept being the villain and I knew he was going to come back, it was like, yeah, this is perfect. This is exactly why you cast Mark Strong in this role.
He is, I have to say, he is a very, very good actor. I mean, he does make good movies, and I guess he gets a little bit stuck in some of the things that he does. He tends to play the kind of bad guy or whatever. But he was, he's in the Kingsman movies, which are okay if you like that kind of thing. He's in Kick-Ass famously. And he was in Shazam.
Yeah.
I had forgotten he was in Shazam. And so there's some good stuff going on then. It also, one of my favourite actors is in this, which is a guy called Eddie Marson, who I don't know if you know Eddie Marson.
Possibly.
But he's one of my favourite actors. He's a guy in this who played...
Lestrade? Lestrade,
yeah.
I thought it might
I think he did a really good turn. And also Rachel McAdams is, I think, kind of... I'm not sure... I think the character's that interesting, but she does a good job in it, right?
Yeah, this is one of those instances where I'm invoking the Cardellini manoeuvre because Rachel McAdams is in this film.
Does it get an extra point for having Rachel McAdams in it?
It will, yeah.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, we won't pull that thread. We'll leave that in there. That's a good thread. The other thing going into this movie is I'm not, I have to say, a huge Guy Ritchie fan.
Yeah.
There's just something about the movies that he makes that they don't really appeal to me. And I think that kind of had shaded my judgment, if you like, or mm-hmm. whatever the phrase might be, before I was going in. But actually, it's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think it's one of those films where, I mean, if I see it's by Guy Ritchie, but I'm interested, I'll see it. But it's not one of those where I go, oh, the new Guy Ritchie film's out. I'll go and see it. I'm not going to go out of my way to go and watch it. But that being said, I do think he knows what he's doing. He does a good job. He's probably one of those where, in the eyes of someone else, I would say, he's very underrated and he should be making more movies. But then maybe he's just not making the movies that appeal to me necessarily.
There was a Netflix series that he made quite recently, I think, called The Gentleman. And that was very Guy Ritchie, but also very good. Mm-hmm. He also has form in casting American actors who are quite famous in very odd roles. Now, I can't name the movie because I've forgotten, which is not helpful, but he cast Brad Pitt as an Irish gangster.
Right.
And so Brad Pitt is doing this really strong Northern Irish accent. And actually... not doing a bad job of it either. And I've seen the film, but I can't remember what it's called. But that I guess that would kind of explain the Robert Downey Jr. thing. There is a point to make about Robert Downey Jr., I think, because it does seem like odd casting. But I think it seems like odd casting now on reflection.
Yeah.
Because Robert Downey Jr. has become something else. He's Iron Man, he's Marvel, he's this kind of great big Hollywood actor. And you can kind of forget that Robert Downey Jr. is just a really good actor who made good films in the early 90s. He did Chaplin and things like that. And so it's not that much of a stretch to see him playing Sherlock Holmes. It just feels like 16 years after that movie came out, given what's happened with Robert Downey Jr., that makes it seem more odd than it actually is.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It seems like one of those big household names that you wouldn't expect to see as Sherlock Holmes. But there he is, yeah.
And they are making a second sequel, aren't they? I read somewhere that they're making a third one of this series.
Yeah, supposedly. I think it's been in the works for quite a few years. I hope they do get around to it, to be honest.
Well, the bit that I read said that it was definitely going to happen, and Dexter Fletcher had signed on to direct the movie.
Oh, wow. I don't know who that is.
Well, he was a child actor.
Right.
Then he started making movies. The last thing that I know that he did, I think he directed the Elton John biopic.
Right.
He also did, he finished Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie, after there was a bit of an issue with its director that was Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
Who, for reasons that we can only speculate on, disappeared from making that movie. And so they brought in Dexter Fletcher to finish it off.
Right. I didn't know that any of that.
So there you go. So he's apparently signed on to make the third one.
Wow. I hope it does get made.
Yeah, I hope so too. It'd be nice to see Robert Downey Jr. Do something outside of the Marvel Universe, if I might be so bold.
Yeah, instead of going back to it, yeah.
Instead of going back to it. But that's a whole different podcast.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't remember the last film that I saw with Robert Downey Jr. in. That wasn't, I mean, apart from Sherlock, obviously, that wasn't a Marvel movie. Can you name one?
I know he's in Oppenheimer, but I haven't seen that.
I have seen Oppenheimer, and yes, he is in it. And he's very good in it, actually.
He won an Oscar for that, didn't he?
Doing that Robert Downey Jr. thing. Did he?
I don't know, actually. I mean, that's the year that I watched it, and I can't remember. So, you know.
You've mentioned the Oscars, and we'll come back to the Academy Awards talking about this film, but a little bit of commiseration for Wallace and Gromit, because it didn't win the Best Animated Feature Oscar this time around.
No, but part of me expected that it wouldn't, but I'm confused, because I thought it would have lost to The Wild Robot. I haven't heard of Flo.
I know nothing about Flo, and yeah, we're getting a bit off topic here, but I have to say, I probably agree that I wasn't expecting it to win.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice if it had.
It did win a BAFTA, though, so I can accept that. I think it were two, maybe? I could be wrong.
Of course it did. Well, actually, let's do that, right? So let's stick to the awards for Sherlock Holmes, seeing as we're on that topic and we need to find a way back into the movie. So if the question is, did it win any Academy Awards? Did it win any awards of any kind? What would be your kind of immediate response to that?
I want to say that maybe it was nominated, but I'm not entirely sure it would have been. It might have just sort of missed that sort of opportunity.
Well, I kind of enjoy doing this, because sometimes you get a sort of faint surprise that a movie was nominated for an Oscar or whatever. And I wasn't expecting much from this, I have to tell you. But it was nominated for two Academy Awards,
right?
Best Art Direction and Best Original Score, which was Hans Zimmer. More on that later. But Robert Downey Jr. won a Golden Globe Award for his performance in this movie.
Wow, good for him.
Best Actor. It won the Empire Awards Best Thriller. It won Outstanding Visual Effects from the Visual Effects Society. And it was nominated for a fair amount of awards. And I just thought that was really surprising.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's not all about awards and things, but it's interesting that they wouldn't have made the third one sooner because of that.
Right. Absolutely. And it, on that, the budget of whatever it was, $90 million, making $524 million, it made a fair amount of money. Hence the sequel. Maybe the sequel bombed, but that's for another podcast. Yeah. I don't know. But I was quite surprised by that. And we mentioned the score by Hans Zimmer. Do you have anything to say about the score?
Yeah, I thought it was like proper good music. It felt very Sherlock Holmesy, and I think that just sort of added to it all, and I really enjoyed it because of that. I know there's been a lot of iconic Sherlock Holmes theme songs, especially with the BBC show, but this one just worked and it felt in its place. And I know Hans Zimmer's quite good at that. But I, you know, to be honest with you, I think he is one of the greatest, and it just works every time for me.
Yeah, he is. He's probably in the top two or three soundtrack composers of all time. You know, I don't know who you'd put.
I feel like we say that a lot.
but he just is, isn't he? He is he is to soundtracks what John Williams is to soundtracks. And, you know, if to even talk about somebody in the same breath as John Williams, I think is, you know, worthy of note. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be people out there that prefer Hans Zimmer to John Williams. He's definitely in my top three. One of the things I did like about Sherlock Holmes is, and I'm not a Sherlock Holmes buff, right? And I don't know enough about Sherlock Holmes, but I can definitely say confidently that it had a lot of references in it, actually, to the books. It tried to stay very true to what some of the stories in the books. And there are lots of little in-jokes and references and things like that.
Yeah.
And even lines that are directly lifted from the novels that found the way into this movie. And I actually, despite the, I don't know, the kind of interesting casting choices, the interesting choice of director, I think it did aim for a little bit of authenticity for Victorian England.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that as well, because one of my trivia is apparently that after Guy Ritchie had signed on as the director, he insisted that the two of the cliches from Sherlock Holmes wouldn't be in the movie. So the sentence, "Elementary, my dear Watson," and also the deer stalker. So they were taken out completely. But it is very faithful to the source material, even without those things.
Yeah, there are all these odd kind of references. And there's something about... he mentions that he's been drinking something that's actually supposed to be used for eye medicine and things like that. And that's a reference to the fact that in the actual Sherlock Holmes books, he's a massive opium addict.
That's right, yeah.
and even things like the name of the lady that Watson is marrying is faithful to the character in the books. But I never got into Sherlock Holmes books, or even sort of would I really seek out Sherlock Holmes movies to watch.
Yeah, I'm going to admit something here. In secondary school, by the end of the day, we had one day every week where we had to read a book from the library or from home. And from the library, I chose a Sherlock Holmes book, and I started reading it and realised I wasn't clever enough for a Sherlock Holmes book. So there you go. Never again.
Can I confess something on the podcast as well?
Okay.
It is book related. And that is, I don't like Victorian literature.
I agree with that, yeah.
I find it mind-numbingly dull.
Yeah.
So Sherlock Holmes, I can't get into it. Charles Dickens, I can't get into.
Mm-hmm.
Brontes, Jane Austen, all of that stuff. I find it dull. I realise that's controversial and people will write in, but I've got to admit, I don't like it.
Yeah, what's weird is your daughter, my sister, is kind of into that sort of thing. So it's weird that it wasn't for you, it wasn't for me, but it is for her.
But again, I just think it's kind of what you like and what you don't, isn't it? And I just never got on with it. I just used to think, no, I can't get into it. And I am an avid reader. I love reading. I read every day.
Me too, yeah.
But then it didn't really work for me. I did also like this film was nominated for visual effects, and I thought, well, hang on a second, why? And then you realise the whole thing is a massive visual effect.
Yeah, looking back, I think, yeah,
and,
I agree.
And super subtle visual effects as well. It's not recreating trolls or spaceships. It's just recreating a particular period of you know, London, England, and it does so incredibly well.
Yeah, it's one of those films where I'm watching it and I go, hang on a second, this can't possibly be how London looks. So it's quite impressive that they're able to just sort of build that landscape digitally as well, yeah.
I wonder, we've probably mentioned this before, but I wonder how hard it is really to visualise as an actor that... You know, you're probably in front of a blue screen, or you're in a London street with a blue screen hanging behind it. And I wonder how hard that is really to think, how is this actually going to look?
Yeah, I've always found it quite interesting, because I know actors have a lot going on and a lot to think about as they're doing it. But they've got to have their own imagination of what they're seeing around them. So you kind of, as an actor, you must build up your own picture of what is around you and what you're looking at and what sort of thing you make an eye contact with, and then see it completely differently in the end. It's quite an interesting thing. I wonder if there's theories about it.
There must be. There's a great scene in one of the Ricky Gervais programs. I think it's Extras. and he's auditioning for a part, and the director is Sir Ian McKellen. And so Sir Ian McKellen decides he's going to explain his acting method to Ricky Gervais. And he says, so when I'm in a scene and I'm playing Gandalf the Wizard, I know that I'm not Gandalf the Wizard. So instead, I pretend to be Gandalf the Wizard.
that's such
a good joke. And it's so Ricky Gervais going, oh, yeah, OK, all right. And it's just, yeah, it's very funny. Very, very funny.
Nice.
Indeed. The plot of this movie is probably the one area where I might want to be a bit pernickety, because it does seem to have a plot going on, and it does seem to be quite a grand plot, you know, this secret society planning to blow up the Houses of Parliament or whatever, take over the Houses of Parliament, kill everybody, whatever it is. But at no point did I find myself terribly engaged with it, nor indeed feel any tension about it.
Yeah. I always find when there's movies set in this era that talk about magic and witchcraft, that it's either going to just be something clever that sort of doesn't fully make sense but you can accept, or they buy into it too much and it's actually witchcraft and it ruins the whole thing.
I did kind of, but
it's one of those things.
But it is also true that there is a kind of element to Sherlock Holmes that is fantastic and magical and witchcraft, and the whole thing about once you've eliminated whatever, then the impossible could be true. But the other thing is, well, the plot was so convoluted that as you know, when you're watching a movie about somebody who's solving crimes, you want to have a good idea what the clues are. You want to, when you see the kind of resolution at the end, you want to look at that and go, okay, that's good. Oh, yeah, I see what you've done there. Oh, yeah, that bit of dust on the floor is important. Oh, yeah, that was good. This was a decent red herring. And at the end, it just didn't feel like, it felt like that Holmes had stumbled upon the solution rather than deduced it using his magnificent brain. And that was the bit of this movie that I kind of felt quite let down by.
Yeah, there's films, as you say, where you can go along with it and spot the clues as it happens. But this film is one of those where a rewatch makes you go, I know what's coming, I know that's a clue, and then you put the pieces together yourself. And I think that kind of works in some way. I mean, it ruins the movie as well in other rewatches, but I don't know, movies like this, if you're properly into that sort of thing, you want to be able to figure out as you go rather than come back to it and figure it out on the way.
Right. You,
if that makes sense.
Exactly. You want the revelation of how it all worked out to have been really clear, have clarity, and you know, this detective is such a genius of figuring it all out. I didn't get that. You definitely did get that. For those of you who ever seen it, you definitely did get that in the kind of modern reworking of Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch, even though there was kind of there were things that he had put together that you as a normal human would never put together. You could kind of see signposts to them. And when you reflect on those signposts, you got it. I think the best example of what I'm trying to describe is the film The Sixth Sense, where the big revelation at the end, spoiler alert, he sees dead people. and then when they show you how that works, it's so elegantly, beautifully obvious, but you haven't seen it. And there's no point in this movie where I got that same, oh, of course.
That's like the film If that came out, I think, last year, which I don't want to spoil because that's a great film and it shouldn't be ruined. But there's something very similar to, I would say, the same sort of twist as Sixth Sense, if that's even accurate at all. Yeah.
You must have many out-of-pocket takes and or bits of trivia about this movie. I'm sure it's an absolute trivia fest.
But maybe not. I know that the second Sherlock Holmes film, features the character Moriarty. I didn't know he was in this one. And I thought they must have a different actor. I never looked into it, but according to the trivia, there was actually a different actor in this film and then the second one, where he's more of a character. But apparently they dubbed the voice on the DVD and Blu-ray and television screenings of this film so that it matched the same actor in the second film, who who is Jared Harris.
Jared Harris. I didn't know that. I actually am struggling to remember Moriarty being in the movie. Maybe he is just a voice at the end.
He's one of those cloaked in the shadows kind of characters. Yeah, he might not. Might must have one or two lines if they've dubbed it.
Yeah, interesting. Oh, okay, that is a good piece of trivia.
Cool little Sherlock Holmes reference. When Sherlock looks back at Irene, when the barrels start to explode, the number on the slaughterhouse is 221, which is, of course, a reference to 221 Baker Street.
I've been to that house. I've walked down Baker Street, inadvertently humming the song Baker Street, because you just can't help yourself. And, and I went to 221B. Nice. It's very unprepossessing. You would think it'd be this kind of, maybe it is now, I'm going back some years, but you would think it'd be this big sort of touristy thing, and it isn't. There's just a plaque that says Sherlock Holmes lived here, and that's it.
That's a bit underwhelming.
It was a bit underwhelming. It's quite a long walk as well. Baker Street's quite a long, and you get off at the tube station, Baker Street, and you start, and that's at sort of, let's say that's at number one Baker Street. So then it's quite a long walk to 221, and when you get this, it's like, oh, there's nothing there. But at the end of Baker Street, if I'm remembering this correctly, to go off on another weird tangent, there's a the London Underground Lost Property Office. Okay, so right. and in the window they have this display of odd things that have been left on the London Underground, going back, you know, decades and things like that. And there's some really weird things in there, the things that have just been left on the London Underground.
Wow, who would have thought?
Like a wooden leg.
Oh, whoa. That can't be recent.
You'd think you'd notice.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, I got home and realised my leg wasn't there. My wooden leg wasn't there.
Yeah.
If they didn't notice the wooden leg, I can't wait until they notice that there is no leg.
Yeah. Which reminds me of that fabulous dad joke. I used to know a man with a wooden leg named Smith. Really? What was his other leg called? Yay! Got a dad joke in.
This film was delivered to some theatre. That's a weird segue. There was no segue, but it just felt weird. This film was delivered to some cinemas under the fake title of Elementary Education.
And did anybody know what they were watching?
I hope so. That would be really awkward.
It would, wouldn't it? Especially, like... Yeah. Fascinating. How interesting.
The screenplay for this film was featured in 2008's Blacklist, a list of the most liked unmade scripts of the year, which is a sentence that doesn't make complete sense, but you know.
That Blacklist is fascinating. There is this list of scripts that just sit in development hell for years and eventually get in there. I did actually know that this script had been sat for years waiting for somebody to make it. Did you know as well that there's a staircase in this? I didn't.
Wow.
There's a staircase. It's quite a famous staircase that they run down. There's a chase down this staircase or something. It is exactly the same staircase that's in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh, wow.
It's exactly the same. Cool. Same location, same staircase, basically the same shot of said staircase. And it's just one of those, and it just, I can't remember, it's quite a famous staircase. You know when you get stuck where you keep saying a word over and over again?
Was it staircase?
Staircase. I got stuck in a staircase loop and I couldn't get out of it. I didn't mean to.
You could say it was a spiral staircase.
It was. I was stuck in a spiral of staircases. Oh, I was on a staircase to heaven. Oh, wait, no, that's Stairway to Heaven, isn't it? Killed it.
My last bit of trivia before my out-of-pocket take. I almost missed this. I thought it was quite interesting in a sort of Us way. The song that plays at the end of the second trailer for this film is called Unstoppable by the group ES, and I want to say Post Hummus is what it's called, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. We had an anecdote about that. I was listening to a song by that group, and you said, oh, I know that group, and I thought, oh, that's really interesting. We have a weird sort of connection of music. I mean, obviously we're related, so there's more than that. But I just thought, I remembered that, and I'd forgotten it was in the trailer, but it's one of those songs that we would both recognise, I think. Yeah.
How interesting. Do you know, when this film was released, it did well box office-wise, okay? But there was a feeling that they had timed it badly for its release. So do you know which other film was released on the same weekend as this film?
Oh. Was it another sort of mystery crime thrillery thing?
No, but it was and is a biggie. It is a big, big movie.
It can't be like Iron Man. Oh no, that was the year before. Yeah. I wouldn't know.
It's Avatar.
Ah.
Which I still think holds the record for the highest grossing film of all time. If it doesn't, it was the sequel to Avatar that does. I mean, that was a box office madness. It was like $2.5 billion that it made.
I was one of the people who fought really hard to get Avengers Endgame to take over Avatar. We won briefly, but then Avatar got a re-release.
Yeah, I think the re-releases shouldn't count. I don't think they should count.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's really, really unfair. I sort of resisted Avatar when it came out. I do that sometimes. Things that are so incredibly popular, I just think, no, I'm going to sulk and not go and watch it. And then I eventually did go and see it, and I thought, this is basically Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest.
Yeah.
And I think I arrived at that view on my own, and I think it's shared with a lot of people. But there is something to say about James Cameron and how successful he is as a filmmaker. Just to go off on another little jaunt there. You've got a couple of the Avatar movies, Titanic, which is an absolute monster, Terminators, monsters. This is one of those people who doesn't make many films, but when he does, my goodness, they're big, aren't they?
Yeah, true. I'll admit, though, that I haven't seen Avatar.
I definitely haven't seen the sequel. I sort of wasn't really interested in it. Partly I wasn't interested in it because the way we watch movies has changed now. People don't really go and watch movies at the cinema. And I sort of missed it when it was on its cinematic run. This film that isn't going to work. Even watching it at home, streaming or on a computer or something, it's just not going to work. So I didn't bother.
Yeah.
There you go.
This is kind of what it is for me as well. On a completely other tangent as well, the directors of the next Avengers films have said that, well, it's not set in stone at all at the moment, but the Avengers 5 is probably going to be another 3-hour one. I don't know if I've got it in me anymore to do that.
No, I know, that's true.
I think I've reached a certain point, I can't do it.
There's a fashion for long movies, or there was a fashion for long movies, wasn't there? And I don't know that I can do it either. That's very, very interesting point. I used to love long movies, and now I just don't think they work for me anymore. We do need your out-of-pocket take, I think. We haven't had it yet, have we?
Yeah. Well, originally it was going to be that they CGI'd out Robert Downey Jr.'s arc reactor, but it's not quite as funny. But then I thought, it's more true to out-of-pocket take, I think. This feels like if you asked Sherlock Holmes to play Robert Downey Jr. playing Sherlock Holmes. That feels like the kind of Sherlock we got, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. I actually think that's a very, very astute observation. Yeah, that's really good. It's also like if you could ask Sherlock Holmes who we would like to play him, he would go, Robert Downey Jr. maybe he wouldn't.
Yeah.
I think I'm ready to go with my score, though. Are you ready to do your score?
I'm definitely ready, yeah.
Okay. We could probably end up calling this episode Sherlock Holmes and the Getting Off Point. We have gone on a lot of little journeys. You get to go first because I nearly went first. I'm so sorry. You get to go first because you selected the movie.
Right.
Sorry.
I did, yeah. That's fine.
Okay.
The whispering's creepy. Should do the rest as ASMR. Anyway, sidetrack. I gave this film 8 out of 10 from memory. I think it was probably because we came off the back of Stormbreaker.
Yeah.
And it was like, I want a positive film. 8 out of 10. But I'm not sure it is. But I don't think my score works anymore. I was going to give it a 6 out of 10 because I think it's one of those above average, enjoyable but not perfect sort of films.
Mm-hmm.
But because I've got the Cardellini maneuver, that means I either gave it a 5 or I have to give it a 7.
Right.
So it's a bit awkward. So But I do want to give it a 6. I think that's where I actually want to put it. So I'm just going to go with 6. Mostly because it's like a compelling, interesting story for me. It's got some great shots, and I think it's been shot perfectly. And I just like the actors and the story, yeah.
Well, as you know, I gave it a 4. And I think I was harsh. But I think I gave it a 4 because my feeling on it at the time had been not my favourite filmmaker and a really odd casting choice. But actually, mm-hmm. I think to be fair, Robert Downey Jr. does a good job because he is a good actor. He is by no means the best ever Sherlock Holmes. But I thought Jude Law was great, Mark Strong was great, and the supporting cast did their bit. Had a really good soundtrack, really well realised CGI world. So I think I'm going to go to a 7 out of 10 for this movie.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a good, solid blockbuster movie. And I think it's one where in 2009, I could go and watch it as an adult with my teenage son, and we would both have got something out of it.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
So it's definitely a 7.
Yeah.
But no more.
No.
It must therefore be my turn to choose next week's movie, yes?
It is.
So it's my turn to choose the movie, and I think what I'd quite like to do is to get some out of the way, okay? So
okay.
I am choosing as our movie for next week. Are you ready?
No.
Aragorn.
Oh dear.
Indeed.
Okay.
So just get it out of the way. There's a lot, awful lot of stuff. Yeah. It would just be nice so we can move on to something good. Yeah, we'll go with the 2006 classic, Aragorn. So I am going to give you my score from memory. My score from memory is 3.
Okay.
3 out of 10. And the only reason it's not 1 out of 10 is because there's nowhere to go from there. So I'm going to give it 3 to see if it has any redeemable features.
I've just pulled it up on the old computer and realized that Aragorn isn't the name of the dragon. Oops. I thought it was the name of the dragon. Anyway, I have seen this film recently, which is why I was also dreading rewatching it. But that being said, I don't remember it at all, which is a bad sign. So I'm going to go similar to you, but not the same, and say 2 out of 10. Not based on memory from watching it originally as well.
I mean, we always have a little bit of a chat about it. I'm trying to remember whether or not it was a film that we were interested in seeing, excited to see, or whether it was just a film that we would have inevitably gone to watch. I don't really remember too much about it.
I think it's a bit of both.
I do remember when movies like this came out and there would be a book, thinking, I'll read the book. And I started reading the book and thought it was quite okay. And then we went and watched the movie and I stopped reading the book. Because the movie had done sort of very little for me. But more on that, I suppose, to follow. I'm sorry. I feel bad now. I'm going to send you off to watch Aragorn.
I don't like the concept of hate watching something, but this might have to be a hate watch.
Yeah.
Just to get through it.
Yeah. Well, when we come back to this podcast idea in about 20 or 30 years' time, and we've forgotten all of this, and we go back to what's the Golden Compass, that's going to be one where you do hate watch, because you know you never want to see that movie again, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which will probably be the same for this.
It's an interesting thing. I don't know whether we should reveal this to our listener, but the episodes of our podcast that tend to be the most liked and the ones that generate the most response are the ones where we're very negative. So there you go. So
we should be more negative.
So we should probably be more negative. More controversial must be the order of the day. So the Golden Compass is a popular episode, I should tell you. But so maybe Aragorn will capture the public's imagination all over again.
Or will offend a very small fan base.
That's also true as well. And I'm sure there is one out there still patiently waiting for that sequel. That's never going to come. Hey, do you know what day it is today?
I don't actually know what day it is today. Where am I?
In a benefit of hindsight podcast first, there isn't one. It's just a day.
Oh, wait. No. It's Ash Wednesday.
Yeah, but I didn't want to reveal that. Because it timestamps the episode. Okay. So it is Ash Wednesday, but it also is Sports and Recreation Day in Azerbaijan. So okay. if you celebrate Sports and Recreation Day in Azerbaijan, knock yourself out. But it is also Ash Wednesday, which means it was Pancake Day yesterday.
Yeah, it's also Daredevil Born Again Day for those who celebrate.
That's right. New season of Daredevil starts today, doesn't it?
It's a funny call back to when I said about Cobra Kai. There you go. Yeah.
We have timestamped this episode quite badly, haven't we?
Oops.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that just about wraps that up nicely. I should always remind our listener of the email address, thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com, and email us. Oh, an update on the Did You Guess Dad's Swear from the last episode. If you guess Dad's swear, you would win a T-shirt. There have been some magnificent suggestions, which I've enjoyed reading, none of which are currently correct. So if you think you can fill in this blank, he's just blank about on a horse. And if you get that, we will send you a T-shirt. But I should tell you that it does not begin with the word F. So please stop sending me emails with that word in it.
Is that just a personal email or the podcast email?
All of it. Stop coming up and saying that word to me in the street. It's getting embarrassing. It doesn't begin with the word F. Nor A, for what it's worth, because that was a popular choice as well. But no one's got it yet, so that T-shirt is still up for grabs if you can guess my swear from the episode, which we then cut out. So thank you very much for listening. I shall say goodbye to Sam. Bye-bye, Sam.
Bye-bye, Dad.
You know, at the end of this, right, you know when we finish the episode and I say bye-bye, Sam, and you say bye-bye, Dad, and then we go and the music plays and everything else, do you think anybody knows that we're not actually going and that we carry on chatting for a bit longer?
I hope not, because that's like the best bit of the chat.
What, when it ends?
That's where all the comedy gold happens.
But right,
we change our score.
Maybe we should do like a Patreon special. You know, we're not in it for the money, right? Maybe we should just have a free one, or you send us 50 pence or whatever, where you just get to listen to the complete unedited version.
It's a benefit of hindsight after dark.
Exactly that. Yeah, like the extended mix. If you'd like to hear one of the extended mixes, do let us know. I'm sure we've got them all lying around somewhere, and some of them are worth listening. Probably the Stormbreaker one is the best one, actually. So if you ever want to hear the extended edition, let us know via email and we'll set up a Patreon. But we'll make it a free Patreon because we don't want them or need the money. Hang on, I'll rephrase that. We don't want your money. It's not why we do it. Definitely need it, but we don't want it.
I definitely need it, yeah.
Okay then. Well, definitely it is time now to say bye-bye.
Bye.
Your voice went funny then.
I was actually normal compared to the cough that I've been having. Shall I do it a different way?
No, it was...
Bye.
You kind of went... Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. Goodbye. Of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?